Iran's presidential candidates hold their second televised debate in which they outline their social, cultural, and political policies. China warns the United States against pursuing a trade deal with Taiwan. This after Washington said it would start negotiations with the Chinese claimed territory. India registers its lowest single-day new COVID cases in more than 2 months. This is World News with me, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. This edition of the Election Special, let's see what we have for you. Seven candidates in the race for Iran's presidency have outlined their plans during the second televised debate. Ahead of the election, Ebrahim Raisi is pledged to close the social gap. Raisi, who is currently serving as judiciary chief, says that he will review internal government memos on wages and end astronomical payments to certain executives.
The gap in social classes is one of the dilemmas of our society, which in fact is a result of injustice and wrong economic policies that end up with the gaps in different sectors. In such a scenario, one gets hold of astronomical wages while others are left underprivileged. A part of the problem is government directives that have been issued. Hopefully, if I get elected, I will have those bylaws revisited. The multiplication of the salaries of some managers should also be revised. What we need to know is that this much class gap is the outcome of our economic decision-making, like the payment of credit lines and loans in our country.
Well, Raisi highlighted the importance of social freedoms and full implementation of the Constitution. He noted that the people's livelihoods have been seriously damaged in recent years. He said the people's trust in the administration needs to get fixed. Raisi also talked about anti-Iran sanctions, saying that pursuing policies and the removal of embargoes are an obligation of every administration. He said that if elected, he'd define the very important mission for Iranian embassies to engage in economic diplomacy in respective countries. Now, another presidential hopeful, Mohsen Rezai, said that his potential administration would pursue the policy of development. Rezai also outlined his plan for uprooting poverty and boosting Iran's economy in the next 4 years.
The issues of justice and elimination of poverty require major surgeries and more actions to be accomplished. I have a plan for the elimination of poverty. I am going to allocate 450,000 tons of monthly cash subsidies. I will also provide cheap housing units to families and pay salaries to housewives. And I hope that after completing this, there won't be any poor people left in the country.
Rezai defended his plan to increase cash handouts to Iranian households, assuring that he has already made a calculation for the financial resources to back up such plan. He said that he would sell private stocks for all the oil sector on the national stock market. Rezai added that his administration would include people from all ethnicities. He also promised to fight rent and corruption and rein in high inflation, as well as increase the value of the national currency. A reformist candidate for the presidential election, Mohsen Mehralizadeh, says the Islamic Republic must continue talks with the parties to the 2015 nuclear deal aimed at reviving the accord known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. It says Iran managed to foil the U.S. plots on the back of resistance.
The U.S. initiated a maximum pressure campaign against Iran and failed to properly fulfill its JCPOA obligations. But such a campaign failed due to the resistance of the Iranian nation. Our country is right in its stance, and we must engage in negotiations to revive the JCPOA and restore rights under the accord. But decision-makers in all branches of the government must cooperate to help negotiations end well.
Mehralizadeh also said that if elected to office, the average age of his cabinet members would be 45 years. The contender said his government would open the path for talented youth to help tackle the challenges the nation is facing. Presidential candidate Abdel Nasser Hemeti says that he's the voice of the voiceless and the power of the powerless. Hemeti says that he'll provide better conditions for the vulnerable groups of society. He also blamed monopoly as the main reason for the inefficacy when it comes to managing the country's affairs.
I am opposed to monopoly in economics, politics, and culture and the media. Monopoly is the main reason behind inefficacy and inefficiency and a source of corruption. You see, the election is not choosing between the bad and worse. The process is a choice between individuals who believe that the window of opportunity for the interaction of citizens shouldn't be closed and those who are in favor of shutting down all those windows.
Hemeti lashed out at other candidates for not helping the current government to facilitate its campaign pledges. The former central bank chief also pledged to bring drug trafficking under control. He said he'll pursue policies and measures aimed at tackling issues surrounding the environment. The 64-year-old candidate also promised to take steps to remove anti-Iran sanctions. Hemeti said that a competitive market plays a big role in the development, adding that the future administration should provide both health care and education to all people, especially the low-income citizens. Now, another presidential hopeful, Reza Zakani, says that the Iranian population growth is at a critical point. He took the current administration to task for the status quo and pledged that if elected, he'd pave the ground for a rise in population.
The population in the country has reached a critical point that requires a special scheme. Our population growth has currently dropped to 0.8%, which is a critical growth rate. And in terms of infertility, we have slumped to 1.7% from 6.9% in 1981. We must definitely raise the population growth rate to 2.3% in order to emerge from this lamentable state.
Zakani said that his administration would focus on education, the reinforcement of family institution, population growth, public health, and cultural welfare, as well as environmental protection. He regretted the fact that high living costs and housing prices are deterring the couples from having kids. The principal Islamaker said that he would pay special attention to employment and housing and pledge to facilitate marriage conditions. Zakani also outlined plans to eradicate absolute poverty in 1 year. He said his administration would be transparent and accountable to the people in issues surrounding civil liberties. Presidential candidate Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi says that his future government will revise the distribution of duties in all government and non-government sectors. He says that issues surrounding families and the youths will be the main focus of his government.
If elected, my government will deal with households and youths. As for the youths, they would be the main players of our revolutionary government. The youths are the ones who will tackle the issue the country is facing. We will provide the necessary budget and planning to address issues surrounding our young generation. We will create jobs for the young people in their own cities. Regarding the issues of funds for households, we will allocate loans to every young couple, as well as those struggling to find houses.
Ghazizadeh Hashemi said that his future administration will prepare new models based on the people's trust to criticize the current government for lack in measures in tackling brain drain. The candidate also pledged to deal with unemployment. He noted that his government will facilitate marriage for the young generation, eliminate university entrance exams, and deal with problems surrounding the compulsory military service. Now time for the principal of Iskander Saeed Jalili, who says that the culture of show-off in the Iranian administrative system is hindering the country's progress. He says the next government needs to put in real work and carry out much-needed structural reforms.
This problem is not exclusive to certain political camps or governments. If you do not root out this culture in the administrative system, this will restrict the country's capacities. When show-off replaces real work, you cannot expect any progress. If you put aside the root of the problems and instead focus on showing off, the country's challenges will remain in place. The progress will come to a standstill if you fail to conduct a structural budget reform and neglect the banking monitoring system.
Jalili says that the people must feel the result of the government's efforts to address their existing problems. He said also that the real work needs to be done. Prior planning and serious follow-up should also be there. Jalili said that the next president must also draw plans to tackle big challenges. He added that there are the needs for coordination among different administrative branches and follow-up work and efforts to tackle the problems. Well, that was the special election coverage. Now let's move on with the rest of this news broadcast. China is warning the U.S. against pursuing a trade deal with Taiwan.
We urge the United States to implement the One China principle and provisions of the three China-U.S. joint communiques to stop any form of official exchanges with Taiwan, handle the Taiwan issue cautiously, and refrain from sending any wrong signals to Taiwan independence forces.
Now, the comments by the Chinese spokesman follow Monday's remarks by the U.S. Secretary of State. Antony Blinken said that the U.S. is or will be engaged in trade talks with Taiwan and some kind of framework agreement. Other American officials said that Washington believes it's important to continue strengthening bilateral trade relationship with Taipei. China has its sovereignty over Taiwan under the One China policy. The country regards any high-level contact between the U.S. and the South Wu Island as interference in its internal affairs. Now let's take a look at some COVID news. India has registered nearly 86,500 new cases in one day. It's the lowest daily rate in that country in 66 days. On Tuesday, India reported 2,100 new daily deaths. Total fatalities now exceeding 351,000 out of 29 million infections. The country was struggling with a devastating second wave of coronavirus in April and May. That caused daily infections to reach their peak of more than 400,000 last month. Strict lockdowns and vaccinations helped contain the surge. On Monday, key Indian cities reopened for business. However, some curbs remain in place, such as bans on dining in restaurants. Now let's take a look at the situation here in Iran. The country has reported 179 more COVID fatalities in the past day, and that raises the death toll here to more than 81,000. The health ministry also logged 8,000 new infections in the day, raising the caseload to 2.98 million. According to health officials, over 2.5 million patients have also recovered from disease since the beginning of the pandemic. Iran sees a downward trend in cases and deaths, and that after the government imposed strict nationwide restrictions in April following a spike. The country has also administered some 5 million COVID vaccines so far. The rollout is expected to accelerate during the next months with the introduction of homegrown jabs. A U.S. government study on the origins of COVID-19 reportedly find out that the hypothesis of a virus leak from a Chinese laboratory in Wuhan is plausible. The classified study by U.S. National Laboratory calls for further investigation into the issue. According to the Wall Street Journal, the secret survey was carried out in May 2020 as part of a State Department inquiry into the origins of the pandemic. President Joe Biden said last month that he had ordered aides to find answers to the origins of the virus. U.S. officials have accused China of withholding data on the issue. Beijing has denied that. In March, a World Health Organization team concluded that the lab origin of the virus is extremely unlikely. Commentator Fabrizio Goldoni says that the U.S. is trying to score political points by raising questions about the origin of the coronavirus pandemic.
Because it can be propaganda, can be some political interest behind this kind of news, and we have to look 360 degrees, you know, not only in China, but also outside. The origin, basically, the possibility is only two. Or is it natural, or is a laboratory accident. If it's a laboratory accident, you know, has to be found some evidence. If it's an animal, we have to find the host. We have, you know, papers from the Barcelona University that bring the case in Spain at 12th of March of 2019. We have papers in Italy from a very important institute, if you want I can quote, the National Cancer Institute, where they detect virus in the blood samples and they bring back the infection in September 2019, when the first official case in Italy was 21st of February of 2020. So there is quite a lot of things that has to be investigated, in my opinion.
More than 800 suspected criminals have been rounded up worldwide in a sting operation using the FBI-run encrypted messaging application. According to Bureau officials, the joint U.S.-Australian police operation targeted criminals in 18 countries. Those nabbed were from Australia, Asia, South America, and the Middle East. They were involved in global narcotics trade. The secretly distributed A&M application allowed the police to monitor chats about drug smuggling, money laundering, and even murder plots. Other than gang members, some $150 million in cash, tons of drugs, cryptocurrencies, weapons, and luxury cars were seized during the raids. The European Union police agency Europol described the operation Trojan Shield as the biggest ever against encrypted communications. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
The annual report vastly understates civilians killed by the U.S. military, and condolence payments are not offered even in confirmed cases, says Nick Terse, reporter, in an article published under the heading, Pentagon undercounts civilian casualties in new report, experts say. Stay tuned for more. The U.S. military killed 23 civilians and injured another 10 in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Somalia during 2020, according to a Pentagon report on civilian casualties that was released recently and immediately faced charges of being a whitewash. Experts said the report vastly undercounts the dead and wounded from U.S. military operations, and they noted that the Pentagon failed to provide condolence payments even in the handful of cases where it acknowledges causing death or injuries. The failure to accurately account and make amends for civilian harm does a disservice to civilians already suffering unimaginable loss, as well as to the Americans who deserve fuller transparency into the ways that U.S. operations have harmed civilians, Annie Shiel, the senior advisor for U.S. policy and advocacy at the Center for Civilians in Conflict toward The Intercept. She also notes, an enormous discrepancy between DOD civilian casualty numbers and those published by civilian harm tracking organizations, human rights groups, the United Nations, and the media. We'll be right back. conservative accounting of civilians killed by the U.S. military in 2020, according to Air Wars, a UK-based airstrike monitoring group, is almost five times higher. 102 non-combatant deaths resulting from U.S. attacks in Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. And, as Chris Woods, the director of Air Wars, pointed out, the Pentagon's failure to pay out any compensation to affected civilians during 2020, despite several million dollars being available for that purpose, suggests a lack of interest in the devastating aftermath of those U.S. actions which go wrong. The Pentagon's dramatic undercount does not include any of the secret attacks carried out by the Central Intelligence Agency, which the U.S. government does not acknowledge. Nor does it take into account the civilian toll resulting from assistance to allies such as Saudi Arabia, whose bombing campaign has killed thousands of civilians in Yemen. The new report also notes that the Defense Department did not offer or make any such ex gratia payments during 2020. The reasons behind the lack of payments and whether any are pending remain opaque. Michael Howard, a Defense Department spokesperson, told The Intercept that numerous factors can affect a commander's decision to offer an ex gratia payment, and details on the number of payments planned or in progress are not available on short notice. Experts were vexed by the failure to provide payments. Congress has repeatedly authorized funding for ex gratia payments for civilian harm, and confoundingly, the DoD has repeatedly failed to make substantial use of those funds despite the large number of cases where the department has confirmed civilian casualties, said Civic Shield. This latest annual report covers U.S. military actions in Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, as well as Nigeria, where a hostage rescue mission was conducted in 2020. It also adds to the Pentagon's official toll an additional 63 civilian deaths and 22 injuries during 2017 to 2019, mostly in Iraq and Syria. The Pentagon, Howard noted, continues to assess new reports concerning past operations after they are received and reconsiders previous assessments if new relevant information comes to light. Rather than deploying its sizable resources to conduct comprehensive investigations, experts said that the Pentagon appears to be outsourcing the legwork to human rights groups and journalists, and then only deeming a few cases credible. It appears many of the civilian casualties acknowledged in the report come from outside groups or sources asking the military to review its strikes or actions. Priyanka Mutapati of Columbia Law School's Human Rights Institute told The Intercept, adding, "We just don't see the signs that there is a serious effort to understand the full impact of U.S. military operations on civilians." The Pentagon report marks only the third time the U.S. has acknowledged killing or wounding civilians in Yemen. Last May, the Pentagon stated that it did not identify any civilian casualties resulting from U.S. military operations in Yemen in 2019, but the new Defense Department report now acknowledges the killing of one civilian in Al Baida, Yemen, on January 22, 2019. An investigation by the Yemen-based Mutuana for Human Rights published earlier this year revealed that an airstrike in Al Baida on January 21st or 22nd, 2019, killed Saleh Ahmad Muhammad Al-Ghaisi, a 67-year-old farmer and painter who locals said had no terrorist affiliations. A witness told Mutuana that a drone conducted an airstrike on Saleh's car. They are being killed in cold blood, said family members. The U.S. military has spent nearly 20 years killing people in Yemen, but still hasn't worked out how to properly investigate and ensure accountability, said Raida Mutawakkil, the chairperson of Matwana for Human Rights, citing this new belated admission by the U.S. military shows how inadequate initial U.S. assessments of its own operations are. Its records cannot be trusted. Over 4 years, the Trump administration conducted at least 181 attacks in Yemen, nearly the same total as President Barack Obama carried out during 8 years in office. Attacks under Trump resulted in an estimated 76 to 154 civilians' death, according to Air Wars. The Defense Department, however, claims that as few as 13 civilians may have been killed or two wounded in three attacks during that same four-year span. U.S. Central Commander CENTCOM only acknowledged the January 2019 civilian death about 5 months after Marwana presented evidence that Saleh Ahmad Muhammad al-Ghaisi was a non-combatant. It's become a pattern. The Pentagon's previous Yemeni civilian casualty admissions, both stemming from attacks in 2017 under Trump, followed reporting by The Intercept of a massacre of Yemenis by Navy SEALs and an air wars investigation of an airstrike that the Pentagon later said wounded two civilians. There is no evidence of CENTCOM ever having reported civilian harm from its actions in Yemen, unless first prompted by media or NGOs. That suggests, in our view, a lack of command prioritization on this vital issue, Wood said. Air Wars was shocked to learn, for example, that despite reported civilian harm having escalated sharply in Yemen under Donald Trump, no permanent civilian casualty assessment team was created to review such claims. Matwana reported that Saleh Ahmad Muhammad al-Ghaisi was his family's primary breadwinner, and his car, on which his relatives relied, cost thousands of dollars. Other families have also experienced financial hardship in the wake of attacks where the U.S. has admitted civilian casualties but offered no ex gratia payments, despite funds being available in the Pentagon's budget. It is astonishing that the U.S. military has acknowledged new reports of civilian death, but has not made a single payment to an affected civilian, or, as far as we know, any offer of assistance, said Mota Party of Human Rights Institute, adding, acknowledging errors is an important step, but those harmed are left to rebuild their lives and recover from losses with nothing.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم إني أسألك برحمتك التي وسعت كل شيء وبقوتك التي قهرت بها كل شيء وخضع لها كل شيء.
So as you have been previously with us, the part under discussion was the beginning phrase, اللهم إني أسألك برحمتك التي وسعت كل شيء. Allah, I ask you by your mercy that enveloped everything. And this everything, كل شيء, was being discussed. Now, in the previous programs, we have talked about the creation of human beings. And in this program, we'll have another look. Human lungs inhale and exhale the air approximately 500 million times during a typical lifetime. In the respiratory system, there are hundreds of thousands of glands that filter out a sticky liquid in order to absorb the harmful dust particles entering the lungs when breathing. If this liquid did not exist, the particles would obstruct the respiratory pipes in a few seconds, and this would cause death. And also, there are tiny hair in these pipes that they constantly clean them. These hair clean all the pipes 12 times per second and send harmful particles into the digestive system, in which they become ineffectual. And these respiratory pipes transfer the air to 750 million bags inside the lungs, in which the carbon dioxide is taken from the blood and oxygen is replaced instead. The respiratory system, in spite of being really small in size, has an important duty and amazing process, and which is but a part of كل شيء, that everything that are embraced by the Almighty Allah's mercy. Another aspect of the human beings when we look at is the human skin. It has various benefits. For example, there are very tiny holes all over the skin through which some part of human breathing takes place. If those holes were to be closed, human beings could not continue life. Also, the skin contains glands that produce sweat, which filters it out to maintain the normal body temperature. Also, the skin defends the body against the intrusive microbes.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful Oh Allah, bless Muhammad and his progeny Oh Allah, I beseech you by your mercy which encompasses everything and by your power by which you overcome everything and which submits to it everything and humble before it is everything and by your might by which you conquer everything and by your majesty against which nothing can stand And by your greatness which prevails over everything And by your authority which is exercised over everything
And by your own self that shall endure forever after everything has vanished. And by your names which manifest your power over everything. And by your knowledge which pervades everything. And by the light of your face, which illuminates everything, O He who is light, O He most holy, O He who is light, O He most holy.
One of the other duties of the skin is that it wards off parts of body poisons and filth through sweat, and it helps the kidneys in their duties. It also prevents the useful body liquids from leaking out. And the most important of all is that the skin is the organ for sensation, for sensing of touch. It helps us feel cold, it helps us feel heat, softness, harshness, thinness and thickness of the objects. You may have seen or you may have heard of some people who have lost these senses. In this case, how should they understand if one part of their body is being destroyed or it's being burned? Only by the smell. So you suddenly have a look at your hand and you see that one part of your hand is being burned. And since you have no sense, unless you have to look at it and understand what really is going on. And still, there are so many aspects of the skin that are yet unknown to human beings, to the researchers. But what is of utmost importance is to know that the skin is another blessing that is embraced by the Almighty Allah's mercy. And hence, so many useful processes are carried out inside it. And the point is that they are unseen and mostly unknown by the human beings. So you may have a kind of understanding of the vastness of the phrase رَحْمَتِكَ الَّتِي وَسِعَتْ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ, of the mercy that has enveloped everything, all the things we know and we do not know, all the things we are aware and we are unaware. I mean, the things we are mentioning in this program are the things that are discovered by the scientists. Yet so many aspects remain to be discovered by the scientists. And those are all the signs of the Almighty Allah's mercy. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
www.parstoday.com/en.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the Limelight.
Hybrid COVID-19 strain fuels new outbreak that threatens Samsung, Apple, LG, Panasonic, Foxconn, and other high-tech giant production facilities in Vietnam. Here we present you an article in this regard, written by David Hart, under the heading, New Vietnam Variant Imperils Global Supply Chains. The article was published by the Asia Times Daily. Please stay tuned. Vietnam's Health Minister Nguyen Thanh Long said recently that authorities had detected a new variant of COVID-19, a hybrid of the strains first found in India and Britain, and which could be more contagious than other known variants. Genetic sequencing by Vietnam's National Institute of Hygiene and Epidemiology has reportedly detected 4 people infected with the new variant. The minister said the new strain may explain why infections are spiking so quickly in Vietnam. At the time of reporting, infections have been recorded in at least half of Vietnam's 63 municipalities and provinces. That's ringing alarm bells, not just locally but worldwide, inside of Vietnam's growing role in industrial supply chains. Vietnam recorded only 1,465 cases in all of 2020 and was one of few countries worldwide to record positive economic growth of 2.9%. But a spike since early April has seen case numbers rise above 7,100. Some 325 new infections were recorded on May 31st, above the 7-day average of 290 so far. 47 deaths have been confirmed. However, according to Nguyen Khoc Duong, a PhD candidate at Victoria University of Wellington, the new Vietnamese government that took the reins earlier this year is less willing to impose tough restrictions than the previous administration. According to the Oxford COVID-19 Government Response Tracker and its stringency index, in which 0 represents no restrictions, and 100 is the strictest, Vietnam was home to some of the most stringent restrictions in Southeast Asia in 2020. However, at the latest data studied, May 24th, Vietnam's stringency rating was lower than Malaysia and Laos. Moreover, current restrictions are indexed as less stringent than they were in early February and in the summer of 2020 during a second wave of the pandemic in Vietnam. Duong said economic concerns are the obvious reason, not least because the economy has been weak after a year of COVID, and the pressure to keep industrial zones open amidst worries about production disruptions. While Vietnam is forecast to grow by 6.6% in 2021, the World Bank says the government has been fixated in recent weeks on keeping supply chains running. The health ministry has raised concerns that infection rates are growing rapidly in the industrial zones in northern Bac Ninh and Bac Giang provinces near the capital Hanoi, where major foreign brands, including Samsung and Foxconn, have factories. On Saturday, June 5th, the ministry announced it would prioritize vaccinations for 240,000 workers in the area, sending at least 200,000 vaccines to each of the two provinces in the hope that they can all be administered within a week. According to an official statement released recently, the Vietnamese government also appealed to the likes of Samsung and Apple to help procure vaccines for their own workforce. Vietnamese factories produce an estimated half of Samsung's global phone and tablet output, making Vietnam the second largest exporter of smartphones in the world after China. After a $670 million US dollars investment in a mobile phone manufacturing plant in Bắc Ninh province in 2008, Samsung's countrywide investments rose to $17.3 billion within a decade. Intel has also invested at least $1 billion in a semiconductor assembly and testing facility in Ho Chi Minh City. Tech giants LG, Apple, Panasonic, and Foxconn are also heavily invested in Vietnam. The global electronics industry now accounts for about 40% of Vietnam's exports. By 2019, the country had become the fourth largest exporter of electrical goods and components to the U.S. According to the Ministry of Industry and Trade, Vietnam's combined exported goods were worth $281.5 billion last year, up 6.5% from 2019. Vietnam has been one of the chief beneficiaries of international decoupling from China as Western, Japanese, and Korean firms have sought to move their operations away from single market production in recent years, a trend accelerated by the U.S.-China trade war that began in 2018. Any major disruption to these new supply chains will put Vietnam in a spotlight and under on a constant pressure, especially as industrial production in China has seemingly returned to pre-pandemic normalcy. Bắc Ninh province, home to most of Samsung's factories in Vietnam, recently imposed curfews and other service restrictions, while four industrial parks across the two provinces were temporarily closed. It is believed they will soon reopen as factories have been advised by the government to offer alternative arrangements for workers. Reports indicate that factories within special economic zones in these provinces as well as other industrial heartlands are converting more warehouses into living quarters for workers to limit the impact on production. Provincial authorities have suggested companies take such measures as well as rotating staff in shift work to limit contact between employees. Comments by the Korea Chamber of Business in Vietnam to the press in recent weeks suggest that the surge in infections has most strongly hit small and medium-sized factories in Vietnam, whereas the large production centers run by multinational firms have been better able to maintain production. Jiang said the government is biding its time for the vaccinations, and given the possibility of domestic vaccine production from September onward, it is less likely to impose lockdown measure in critical industrial provinces such as Bắc Ninh, Bắc Giang, and Thái Nguyên. He added, Chin's provincial government is surely taking a huge risk, but whether it has paid off or not, we need to wait and see in a few months. On the whole, Vietnam has been the standout performer in Southeast Asia. The country of 96 million people has recorded just over 7,000 cases since the pandemic began. Neighboring Cambodia of 16 million people has had more than 30,000 cases. However, it is falling behind in terms of vaccination. According to official data, around 1.4 million people in Vietnam, or 1% of the population, have had one dose, but only 28,529 have received all their necessary doses. According to our rolled-in data, vaccination rates peaked in late April and early May, when around 6/10 per 100 people were being vaccinated, but it has since fallen to around 1/10 in recent weeks. Vietnam has signed a deal with some medicine companies for 30 million doses to be delivered later this year and is currently in talks with some other companies that, if successful, would provide enough doses to fully vaccinate 80% of the population. The government has also said Vietnamese firms will be able to bring their own vaccine to market by September or October. Recently, the authorities announced that they intend to test all 9 million residents of Ho Chi Minh City, the country's largest city and Vietnam's business hub. Local news reports suggest that the testing capacity will be 100,000 people per day, a rate that would take months if the entire city is to undergo a test. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on June 4, 2014, by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of the demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini. The speech was delivered at Imam Khomeini's shrine.
In the face of all these invasions, and all these violent and unscrupulous hostilities, the Islamic Republic was not destroyed. It did not adopt a conservative outlook, it was not blackmailed by the West, and it made progress on a daily basis. This is what forms the essence of this curiosity. Despite the fact that the primary military, political, and economic powers of the world joined hands against a country and a government, and despite the fact that they made efforts for 35 years, not only was this government not destroyed, but it also became stronger on a daily basis. This government was not blackmailed by them, and it did not pay any attention to them at all. The Islamic Republic showed its power and capability to survive in different arenas. Today, when they look at the Islamic Republic, they see that the second and third generations of the revolution in the country are several million students, several thousand knowledgeable clergy, several thousand researchers, several thousand university and seminary professors, thousands of scientific and intellectual personalities, some of whom are well known on an international level, and thousands of activists and producers and thousands of political, cultural and economic personalities. This is the reality about our today's society. In the arena of science and technology, the Islamic Republic launches satellites into space despite all sanctions. It sends living creatures into space and it brings them back. It produces nuclear energy. It is ranked amongst the first 10 countries in the world in many new sciences. The centers in charge of releasing statistics have announced that the rate of scientific progress in the Islamic Republic is 13 times faster than the global average. It gives scientific and technological services to different countries. Despite unprecedented sanctions, it manages a 75 million strong country. It has the final word on regional policies. It shows resistance against the uprising Zionist regime, which is supported by global bullies, and it does this on its own. It does not compromise with oppressors, and it defends the oppressed. Any well-informed individual becomes curious to know what this organism and phenomenon is and how it benefits from all these innate capabilities and this potential to survive despite all the enmities.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.